All right. It's the Roller and Aldebaro Vintage Baseball Podcast, talking to vintage baseball players from coast to coast, border to border, all over this fine country, and in Canada, if they ever talk to me. Still looking for the Woodstock actives. We got a good one tonight. It's an exceptional one, no pressure. We're talking to the captain of the Delhi Polecats. They're from Hamden, New York. We're talking to Andrews Landsman. Don't say anything, Andrews. First, I got to say hi to my co-host tonight, as I am the barrel roller, and I am a true professional. I do this all in the right order of things. No. But my co-host tonight, Jeff Cougar Kozlowski, fresh off of spring break. Jeff, are you back? Are you energized? Are you ready to go?
No.
All right. Honesty.
We got back from, took a trip to Washington, D.C., and by way of Morganton, West Virginia. And so we did some hiking. My daughter had her birthday on the Monday while we were on our drive to Washington. And she had a great time and the whole family had a good time. But we got back very late Friday night, and Saturday and Sunday was just crazy panic. And then our dryer broke. So I've been scrounging for clean clothes for the last 48 hours.
Wow. That sounds like a lot. Does your area not have a laundromat anymore? Has that phased out? That's gone?
I'm actually mooching off my neighbors right now. So I've been walking across the street into my neighbor's house carrying like a jug of Tide and a garbage bag full of clothes, and all three of my neighbors are pitching in. So there may come a time during this interview where I magically disappear. That's because I'm moving clothes over from one washer to another.
Nice. You always pull the disappearing act at least once. So at least this time you've warned us. So I appreciate that. Anyway, coming in, like I said earlier, the captain of the Delhi Polecats, Andrews Landsman. Andrews, thank you for coming on the show. Pleasure to meet you. Andrews and Jeff, their big brains were bouncing off each other like magnets. It was like two magnets, and they just like, it was amazing. They're going to get going on a couple of subjects here later on this episode that I'm just going to sit back and enjoy myself. It's going to be amazing. And the rest of you who are listening. So, Andrews, I'm going to stay in vintage baseball as long as possible, but you are a dude that's got a lot of meat on the bone to talk about. And I wasn't referring to that short called Dickhead that you're a part of. I'm referring to what an interesting life you've led, and we don't even know all of it. This is going to be crazy. Good topics.
I know.
Everybody, before, I want everybody who's listening to this to pause it. Pause. When I tell you to pause, don't pause yet. Don't pause. Call all your friends. Tell them, hey, he's about to have an actual interesting interview. I think they're all interesting, but we know you don't think that way. This is going to be a good one. Call your friends. Call your friends' moms. Tell your mom's friends. Download this episode and start listening. Okay, pause. Okay, you're back. Thanks for doing that.
No pressure.
There's... Well,
there reminds me of a T-shirt I had when I was 11 years old. It was just a girl in a hammock, and the words "no pressure." He had an iced tea or something. He was chilling, but that's what I'm thinking about right now.
Well, we're going to get you out of that frame of mind because we're going to talk vintage baseball. There's definitely no pressure when it comes to that. Tell us everything about the Delhi Polecats. I want to know everything, including what you got coming up on your schedule this season.
Indeed. Well, we are the third and youngest team of Delaware County, New York. I know some people out there might have heard of Delco in Pennsylvania. This is not Delco, Pennsylvania. This is Delco, New York. We got our own Delco boys, Delco girls, Delco people. And as I'm sure you've you must have interviewed Colin Miller at least twice, maybe three or four times.
I think we're up to three. I think we're at two full episodes and then a partial.
And Mr. Esquire himself, Nicholas Franson, how many for Rough cut there.
Just one so far.
Just the one. So my fellow captains, my elder brethren, as I refer to them, since they've been doing it a little bit longer than I have, are the captains of the Fleischmann's Mac and the Bovina Dairyman, respectively. I have been by them in the ways of vintage baseball. I knew about it long ago, but it wasn't until COVID when my wife and I moved to Bell High full-time. I sort of grew up half there and half in New York City. I'm a very privileged kid. I don't want to talk about that. But I witnessed a game between these two fine teams, these two ball clubs, at Creamery Field in Bovina in their inaugural year at that field, a beautiful field if anybody gets a chance to visit. And I was hooked. First of all, it was the biggest crowd I'd seen in months. You know, it was outdoors, one of the only things you could do in that year of 2020. And the very next year, we spun off a third team. Apparently, the Mac and the Dairymen were, I don't want to say tired, but they were playing each other a lot, and they wanted another local team. And the interest was great enough that a former Dairyman, my co-captain, the true founder of the Polecats himself, Mr. Benjamin Steamboat Cairns, who unfortunately couldn't be with me today. He's down in North Carolina watching some NASCAR, but we won't get into that. He spun up a team, and our first year we were just called the Delhi Vintage Baseball Club. We played at a few different fields. We actually played behind the Delaware County Historical Association in the town of Delhi, as you would expect with our name being Delhi. But we found the field, Crawford Field, in Hamden, New York, to be extra special. And so in 2022, which would have been our second year in existence, we sort of solidified that as our home field. Spoiler alert, we may be rebranding this year. We actually chose the mascot Polecat as a homage to the town of Hamden, which had a town ball club in maybe as early as the 1950s called the Polecats. So we are mixing a little bit of information with what we're doing. We're doing our best to be as true to the vintage style as possible. Obviously, Colin Miller is over our shoulder sometimes helping us out with that. I'm fascinated by the whole thing. As we touched upon in our brief meeting prior to starting recording, I am indeed an actor, but I am also a sportsman. And to me, vintage baseball is a perfect mélange of sports and historical reenactment. God. And as is everything, theater.
You're so fancy.
So fancy, I know.
Tell.
I just want to get Conan O'Brien back on the field. I want to really encourage the hijinks to bring back the tallest ridiculer in vintage baseball existence.
He'll never do it. He views that as his masterpiece. He views that as the best thing he's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. He'll never do anything like it again. He'll stay completely away from it. You don't mess with Stairway to Heaven, brother.
True.
Well said. Tell us in your very fancy actor words about the field, Crawford Field, if you were describing it to a bunch of people listening who can't see it, because it's a podcast.
Crawford Field exists at the moment in time. When you step on the field, you are really stepping back. You know, there's some fields out there that are take place inside, Old Bethpage out in Long Island. It's everything, you know, within immediate eyesight is truly vintage. And that's the same at Crawford Field, except when you come back to the main road, a lot of things are still, you know, approaching that vintage. Obviously, we have tarmac and paved roads and streetlights and everything in Hamden. But there is something special about a field that, in any direction you look, it's proper. You know, the dugout is made of wood. The tree line covers almost all the houses. It's a really special place, and it's a place that was donated by the Crawford family to the town of Hamden for the express use of baseball as early as the 1930s. And it's probably just a stone throw from the site of the first ever baseball game advertised in print, which we can talk about a little bit later if you like.
No, we can talk about it now. Go ahead. Now.
Well, since you asked, this year, 2024, is the 199th year of baseball in print. The town of Hamden was founded in 1825, and in that year listed 9 names along with a challenge in the Delaware Gazette printed over in Delhi, which is a town founded just slightly before that. We are talking about the center of Delaware County. And it's sort of the Great Western Catskills, if you will, is what they're calling it today. We're about 3 hours drive from New York City right now. But in the year of 1825, it was maybe a couple hours a horse ride or walk from what would become Hamden to Delhi. And Edward D. Chase placed this ad to the Delaware Gazette listing my name, saying, "We will take on any other town's nine players for the sum of $1 to come to my house, the tavern, and play a game of baseball." Now, it was spelled B-A-S-S space B-A-L-L, which brings to mind, did he say basketball? That's what a lot of people think. I personally think the person writing, the scribe, if you will, of the Gazette might have been a musician. So when he heard the word bass, he just wrote like a stand-up bass, you know. But that's just my idea.
He was getting all the chicks if he did.
Either way, if he could write and read and play baseball.
Wouldn't be the first bass player that we featured on the show here. And yeah, I think our bass playing aficionados on the show here would be in agreement that the bass is really the heart of the musical world.
Indeed, indeed. But we are celebrating the 199th year with a small festival in the middle of July, July 13th, the weekend after July 4th, obviously. This year we're having mostly local teams. The Elizabeth Resolutes are also joining us from New Jersey. We hope to turn that into a two-day fest next year in celebration of 200 years. But this year you can come see the Resolutes as well as Dairyman and the Mac all playing, you know, not all together at once, of course, but all playing on Crawford Field on July 13th this year.
Andrews, what is the event that the Canton Cornshuckers are going to be attending?
Now, this one is shaping up to be something possibly to rival the extra special nature of the July 13th. They're coming the weekend of August 3rd and 4th to Delaware County as part of their barnstorming tour. They will be playing at the Mac. I'm blanking on their field name right now, and Colin is going to spank me for this. I mean, not really, but they'll become a Creamery Field in Bovina. They'll become the Crawford Field in Hamden to play the Polecats, and they'll be playing the Mac. The Mac Grounds is, of course, what it's called. How could I forget? So that's shaping up to be something extra special. The Historical Association, which I mentioned before, has actually gotten in touch, and they may be helping us advertise this event, encouraging people to dress in the stands in a period appropriate attire, which is something we don't often get, but would be really cool if it did happen.
The captain of the Canton Cornshuckers was going to join us tonight, unless something came up. So something came up, but this gives you an opportunity to get a truthful and honest scouting report on how to beat the Canton Cornshuckers. Jeff Kozlowski, go.
Okay, so the Cornshuckers are speed. They are fast. They are young, and they are fast. They will do a lot of like overrunning bases to get in your head sort of thing, make you feel like they're going to go. They are one of those teams that you just have to out hit. And don't worry about the extra little silly running around here, because the moment you make one bad throw or your team makes one bad throw is the moment that the guy on second runs to third, the guy on third runs home, and now you're frustrated because you made one bad throw. And you look at like the overall physical makeup of the team, they're not an impressively built club. They're kids. Okay? They're kids in their like early to mid 20s. They're like 100 pounds soaking wet. So it frustrates you, you know, when you make that one play. But
somebody sounds, you know, bitter.
They get the, I've beaten them. I've beaten them before. I've won trophies against them. But yeah, they are fast. They will run. They like to try to hit behind runners. So try to jam them as much as you can. But they, you know, Mike is a really, really solid dude and a good guy for vintage baseball overall. So he's, you know, aware of, you know, the attitude and the personalities on that. he's a good guy. And he'll want to build more relationships with you, but be prepared for speed. That's how they beat teams.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Absolutely. The mental game is more than 50% of what we're talking about. And, you know, every little bit helps. So I appreciate that very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Never throw it to the base behind them. Always throw it to the base in front of them.
Yep.
And then just get the next pitch going as soon as possible. They're just going to try to distract and disrupt. Just get the ball back to the pitcher and play ball. And that's the best thing you can do is just ignore. It's like a crazy ex-wife. Not that I know, but I don't know. Does anybody else know? I don't. I'm just assuming.
No, I'm on one.
You just recently got married, didn't you, Andrews?
It's been 2.5 years now. We just welcomed our first kid into the world 4.5 months ago.
Hey!
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
And he already has a Polecat uniform.
Of course. Wonderful, wonderful. Mm-hmm. 2.5 years, so still in the honeymoon phase. Good for you. Good for you. It's coming to an end. When is the first time? We're going to stay in vintage baseball for a little bit. Andrews, the first time, how do you find vintage baseball? And what's your experience like when you decide that you're interested in this? How does it go the first time you're actually playing it?
So my first time actually playing, in fact, I played with the Connecticut Bulldogs, Chuck and Grit and Brett and all the, those fine ballists up at Cooperstown, playing behind Omegang Brewery in a small festival that included the Dairymen, probably the Mac as well, a few other teams that I'm blanking on right now. But that day I was hooked. I was already a little bit hooked just from being a spectator, but I got up there. Chuck Ciccarello was in fine form. I'm sorry, Chuck Cazzarelli was in fine form, and he was spitting his game, talking about getting your potato grabbers down on those daisy cutters, and I learned the pitfalls of hitting a line drive too hard up against the left field with a bank, because obviously that's going to be an easy one hopper. But I was driving in runs no matter where the ball went. So after my third at bat, he dubbed me the chauffeur. Now that name did not stick because it doesn't really roll off the tongue, as it were. I actually just go by Drewski. It's short for Andrews, and we all know how hard it is to say Andrews with the S. But Drewski rhymes with Brewski. I have been slinging beers for the Catskill Brewery, which we're not really going to get into too much. But unless you want to ask something about this fine Freak Tractor farmhouse ale you got right here, this is something that's actually no longer on the market, so it's fair game.
I don't know what to say right now. I'm going to move past the brewery talk.
We're at the Omegang Brewery, which is a great brewery. The first day I was playing vintage baseball, I actually, I'm sure you've had Pine Tar on here at some point.
Yep.
Mr. Kornhoff himself. I mean, we all know him as only Pine Tar. He had his cart full of big bats. And he brought one out that he called the Freak. The Freak is about 50 inches long, maybe 5-6 pounds. I don't know. But I was swinging the Freak as hard as I could. And on my fourth at bat, I still made contact, but I also tore my oblique. So you could say the Freak tore my oblique. I was on the, riding the pine after that for the next 3 or 4 weeks. But I got back out there in time for the first game with the Delhi Vintage Baseball Club in June of that year. Ben Cairns, Steamboat. He was captain that year. We had 6 dates on the calendar. We won one of our matches, actually against the Mac that year. We had a doubleheader that we were able to get shellacked in both get shellacked and warm up in our first game against Dairymen. And the second game we played against the Mac and bested them with our first and only win of our inaugural season. We came back in 2022. We chose the name Polecats in honor of our new home field in Hamden. Although our uniforms do say Delhi on them, we have a very specific look with a cadet collar taken directly from the oldest photograph I could find of a Delhi baseball team. I think it was circa 1909. Again, playing with the time frame, we do play most of our games today by the 1864 rule set, although at one point we were doing our best to stick to the 1886 overhand. We were thinking about making Delaware County a hub of overhand vintage baseball, which is great if you have a plethora of pitchers and catchers. Those are hard to come by, catchers especially. And so we still try to play at least one overhand game a year. But what was the question?
The question is this. I don't remember what the question
was. You're gonna rein me in, Barrel Roller.
I will absolutely not do that. But you you mentioned Christopher Moran Grit, the one of the captains of Connecticut, and he his latest endeavor is the vintageballist.com. What we're going to do indeed. Is Jeff and I are going to lay out here for Andrews as an actor. He is about to do a free commercial for the vintageballist.com. And he probably knows more about it than I do, but let's give you a count here, Andrews.
I'm going to have to bring that site up again before I
do okay.
this, but, is it really just vintageballist.com? No spaces or anything?
I think it's vintageballist.com.
Yes, indeed. courtesy of Captain Grit. I mean, it's true.
Think about it. Think about it. We're going to lay out so you can, I just want you to do an official commercial in your best actor voice. I don't know, whatever you're going to do. Let's give you a count.
All right.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Hey, sports fans. Have you heard of vintage baseball but don't know exactly what it's all about? Well, let me tell you about a website that will encompass everything you need to know up front. Vintageballist.com. Offered mostly, or entirely perhaps, by Captain Grit himself of the Connecticut Baseball Club of Hartford. You will see pictures of their many different uniforms. You will see rule sets. You will see moving pictures. And you will be able to check out some of the other baseball clubs of the Northeast and its surrounding area. We have descriptions of the Bulldogs, the Liberty, the Eckford Club of Brooklyn, the Dirigo Baseball Club up in Maine, the Lisbon Tunnelmen, the Woodstock Hilltoppers. Mostly we're talking about New England. They do also mention the boys of the Tactical Mountain Athletic League. That's Mountain Athletic Club of Fleischmann's, the Bovina Dairyman, of course, of Bovina, and yours truly, the Polecats, currently of Delhi, but really of Hamden. The Mutuals, the Atlantics, you know, they get enough play. They're also there. I'm not going to name all the teams for you. You just have to come and check it out yourself. You can see the schedules. You can see the news. You can see the moving pictures of vintage baseball. It's really quite special. And we tip our caps to Captain Grit for having brought this to us.
Scene.
Powerful. And scene.
And scene. All right. Excellent job, Andrews.
That was off the cuff, Grit, in case you're listening.
Well, yeah, you're a professional. We go, you know, professionals go off the cuff. I am not a professional. I am an actor at a haunt, but I'm still, they say actor, so I am an actor. Okay. That's as close as I get. I wish Rudy was here. Boy, you guys would go back and forth. I messaged him just in case. Jeff, you got any questions in the vintage baseball territory before we kind of take a walk with our friend into other territories?
I got one. It kind of morphs into the acting side of this here. My belief is that the ideal vintage baseball player is a mix of history, showmanship, and baseball skill. An ideal mix, like one of those color bars where, you know, all three different bars and some people are slid way over to one side, not too far over. You can have three right in the middle. That's, to me, is the ideal player. Is there a way that players can nurture the showmanship side? You know, the players that maybe they are the ones that dig into the history books or the ones that are, you know, fresh off of a certain other sport involving a stick and ball, but neither are really good at talking to visitors. How would a player like that, like, nurture that side to get better, to be somebody that talks to visitors?
I think number one, you gotta just remember it's all in good fun. It's, you know, even though we have some out there that are sticklers for vintage accuracy, and we all want to strive to be as accurate as possible, I think it's important especially when you're talking to the layman, the lay person, you know, they're asking very simple questions. Well, why does the ball have a crosshatch, you know, instead of a horseshoe? Why are you throwing it underhand? And, you know, you just tell them, this is how we do it. This is how it was done. And if you embody it as you play it and you keep open with the new fan, then maybe they're hooked. Maybe they want to play. Maybe they want to come back to another game. And the thing grows. I mean, it is really a very collaborative project. You know, it's, I have taken some pointers, as I said, from Nick Franson, Colin Miller, and Chuck Chicarella especially. And you get three different perspectives. So take your notes from a few different people. Let them mix around inside your own noggin as best they can and do your best. You know, I mean, we're all there to have fun. This to me supplants, rec league softball. Although some of my players do both, and I've heard the Barrel Roller talk about softball on this podcast before, so I don't want to incite him too much. But it's a special thing we've got going on here, and it seems to be growing. It's been growing big time. Let's be honest. COVID had some very specific silver linings. I think Vintage Baseball benefited from COVID. At least in our area, they're more, you know, we have a third team. We have five teams now, if you count Kingston and Saugerties, who I haven't mentioned. And I know you had Kingston on before us. That's okay.
And Saugerties.
We love the guards. Captain Quinn, I mean, he's out there, but that guy's social media skills for his wife's are top notch. I'm thinking of hiring her, but she wants 45 a hat. I don't know if we can afford that.
Get some beer sponsorship. That might help.
Yeah, well, it would, wouldn't it?
But we're not going to talk about beer. I want to. Andrews, we're going to give you a little break here because we are to go into the non-vintage portion of the episode. But what we're going to do to break it up is Jeff Kozlowski is about to do a little acting of his own and bring you it's Jonathan MacLean giving the sports break of the week. He even blocked out his video. You're committed, I'll tell you that. Jonathan MacLean, go ahead.
This is your Roller Out the Barrel news break for Sunday, June 2nd, 1867. I'm Jonathan MacLean. Dateline, New York. The Harlem Baseball Club, coming off a victory this past Tuesday, decided to issue a challenge to an assorted group of people that showed up the following Thursday. Unfortunately, this was a poorly planned April Fool's joke, as the field defeated the challenging Harlems 32-18. It seemed two of the people in attendance played for the nearby Union Club, but the rest of them could have been bartenders for all we know. That notwithstanding, I'm sure the 14 runs in the last three innings that put up the game didn't help either. In Philadelphia, the Quaker City Club defeated the West Philadelphia Club 40-13. 8 of the 9 Quaker City Club members outscored all of the Philly players, especially with the 22 runs tallied in the 8th and 9th innings. Today's news break is brought to you by M. McGill & Company at number 614 Broadway. Summer toggery is rapidly coming in vogue, but it is only complete when surmounted by a handsome Panama hat. For a first-class, custom-made article, we are assured that there is no place in the city like McGill. I'm Jonathan MacLean, and this has been your Roller Out the Barrel news break.
Oh, thank you, Jonathan MacLean. So what he does in that news break, I just want to tell him that I do listen when he gives these. And he always gives a little nod to Die Hard. The movie Die Hard somewhere is given a nod in these. And I just want him to know, I listen, and I definitely know it was the bartender line from the first Die Hard. So that's when Deputy Dwayne is telling Powell when he's on the the radio with John McClane, after he's done talking to him, he says, "Hey, I think he's a cop and, not LA, but definitely a badge." And he's like, "He could be a FN bartender for all we know." So
yeah, for all the children in attendance, I, Jonathan MacLean omitted some of the more salty language.
I'm sure the children appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that is a really time. I know you probably do that for every news break. But that's a really timely choice because everybody knows Die Hard 1 is a Christmas movie, but few people know that Die Hard 3 is actually an Easter movie.
No.
April no. Fools. Well met.
Well, no. And I appreciate, Jeff, you keeping it low key for the kids that listen to the show. It's very important to us, that demographic. Andrews, tell us about Dickhead.
Oh, Dickhead. What a time in my life. A good buddy of mine was cast in the lead of a short film called Dickhead, which actually co-stars a young lady who went on to become very famous, Samara Weaving. I don't know if anybody knows that name, but you look her IMDb up, you'll agree. But the story of Dickhead is basically a guy invited by his crush to her birthday party, but he's like really awkward about it. He doesn't say, he makes dumb jokes and he feels really awkward. He sits down dejected next to a young blonde lady played by Samara Weaving. And my buddy, he's complaining about not being able to talk to his crush. And she just looks at him funny. She goes, "Would you rather eat your dad's dick or grow a dick out of your forehead?" And after a little bit of palaver, he says, "I guess I'd have to pick dick out of my forehead." Of course, what happens? He comes home. I'm his disgusting roommate who stays home on Saturday night alone. We won't get into my character development, but I am the method in which the audience gets to see the dick growing out of his forehead over the next several scenes. Do you want full spoilers? You want to know what happens in the end?
Before you answer that, can people see this?
It's out there somewhere, I'm sure. I don't know if it's like public domain. But it's not listed on IMDb, so I don't know what that's about. But it's on the director's reel, so there is a way to find it.
Okay, so since it's not readily available in your head, you can go ahead and tell everybody how it ends.
So my buddy learns to live with penis out of his forehead. You know, he wears beanies all the time and tucks it up. But at the end of the short, he runs into his crush again, and she's got a beanie on too. And they both sort of start commiserating about how messed up their lives have been. And it turns out that the witch from the party played the same prank on his crush, and she has the matching part out of her forehead. So they start making out. In more ways than one, shall we say. Yeah. And scene. And I'm just there over the shoulder, like freaking out about how awesome it is.
Wow. Great. What year? What year was that? Was that released or made?
2015 to 16 ish, around there.
Okay, I just want to confirm to you that it is not on IMDb. On Samara Weaving's page either, just so you know.
Definitely not.
She was busy though. She was busy in 2015, 2016 between Squirrel Boys, he Who Has It All, Ash versus Evil Dead, Bad Girl, and Monster Trucks. So she's got a good good work ethic in that time span.
Yeah, you know, I'll do some digging. I've only actually seen it on the director's real page, and I'm actually blanking on his name right now. So this is how you don't make it in Hollywood, by the way. You don't remember the names of the people you work with. You just do great work, hope it gets out there.
So tell us how you got the bug. I assume back in high school, or maybe a little before high school, but you got the bug, and tell us everything. Tell us all of it.
The acting bug.
Oh, is there another bug? That one might be important. Well,
we talked about the vintage baseball bug first. That's okay. That's first and foremost. But long before I got the vintage baseball bug, I caught the acting bug in Delaware County. Actually, I as I mentioned before, I was a very privileged kid. I grew up mostly in the city. I went to an all boys prep school, but in the summers I was free to roam the fields and rivers of Delaware County, the many streams and valleys. And I was doing a Shakespeare in the Valley program for young people. And it was the first time that I was really hanging out with girls. So all that together, I have a slightly theatrical family. My older cousins were doing the same program. I really fell in love with acting in general, with Shakespeare. I ended up going to Tisch School of the Arts at NYU for college. Did a fair bit of stage acting in school and also in off-Broadway productions in downtown Manhattan. And took my talents to the West Coast in 2012. My now wife, then girlfriend, also came out nearly the same time. We had a tumultuous courtship, shall we say, in the first few years in Los Angeles, but ultimately found our way back to each other and were pretty solid with each other when we were living together when COVID hit, and that's when we came back east. The acting flame never goes out fully, but our energies are turned elsewhere these days. So to me, vintage baseball is a little bit of an outlet for those creative energies, and I'm really thrilled to be a part of something that's I have also been an athlete of sorts over the years. I've always played some form of baseball or softball, basketball, and pickup football games too.
What do you consider your greatest success so far in the arts?
Greatest success in the arts. Well, that's a tough one. Side picket, obviously.
I think it goes without saying, yeah.
I wrote and produced and directed a short film that I acted in that's called Sadhu, which took me a long time to get fully edited and put out there, but that was something I was really proud of, and I think it actually holds up to this day. It's sort of a chance encounter between two people who had one date. Both of them thought it went really well, but the guy was such a putz. All he did was text the word Sadhu to his lady love after the date, and she did not respond to that. She didn't know what it meant. But of course, Sadhu means sup, dude, in a really sort of nerdy bro kind of way. So that's fun. Pretty obvious moment of time, you know. There's a reference to Vine in it. Let's put it that way.
Wow.
You remember Vine?
I do. I got some chuckles off the Vine. I still see some of those today. You know, it's kind of like seeing a movie from the 80s at this point. I don't know why it hasn't been that long. Also, tell us the other end of the spectrum, the other world. Tell us about the other world.
The other world was something I sort of got roped into towards the end of my days at NYU. I actually showed up just to be an extra. They needed some people with a little bit of fight choreography experience. It's a really, let's just say, budget level fantasy sci-fi epic movie. The director, she took a look at me. She's like, "Oh, we need your face in the screen." So I got a death scene, which was great. That is available somewhere online, and if you've got an hour and a half to waste, I highly recommend check out The Other World.
Rated 3.2 on IMDb. So they needed somebody with fight choreography skills. What would you say is your best fight skill?
Pretty good with a bow staff.
yep, that's the right answer.
Yeah, but it's not a joke. I mean, it is. It's obviously the point of dynamite reference, but it's also true.
It's the right answer. It's the right answer for both reasons.
All right. I also need to hear your thoughts on Extreme Cougar Wives.
Now, to be fair, that wasn't necessarily me. That was a different iteration of a guy who looks just like me named Andre Breton. Andre was asked one day if he would come to the Parker Meridian Hotel, the penthouse, where there's a pool in the penthouse.
Wait, whoa. Is this a show? Is this a show we're talking about?
I'm gonna pull the veil back for our listeners. Anyone out there who still believes that reality TV is real, pause, don't listen, and skip ahead 5 minutes, because I'm going to tell you some real truth. I'm an actor, right? I was called to be on set for a production of a show called Extreme Cougar Wives, starring, she must have been about 75 at that point, Hattie. Her name was Hattie. And Hattie was swimming in the pool, in the penthouse, far from Meridian. And the director basically, he met me outside and he goes, listen, Hattie thinks this is all real. You have to go in there. You've got to just like make a connection. And Hattie was awesome. You know, I think if I hadn't been in a committed relationship myself, I might have gone on a real day with her afterwards. But as it was, I let her sit on my lap. She kissed my cheek. We did have a connection, but it did not go further than the pool side, shall we say. And that's actually one of my biggest regrets.
So you went on, so you got on the show, Extreme Cougar Wives.
I got a call one day, and the call was, do you like older women? And I said, how much older and how much do you think? And what do I have to do? And I said, nothing untoward, and $300. I said, okay. So you didn't answer the third question, but okay. So it was a good day. This is like right before I moved to LA, and in November of that year, I wake up, and all my buddies on the East Coast are like freaking out because I'm on the cover of BarstoolSports.com with a gray-haired beauty on my lap. And I hope Hattie's still with us, and I hope she's having a great time with somebody 30 years younger than she. Because she told me straight up, I don't date unless you're 30 years or more younger than I am.
Wow.
And so that's good for her.
I found Extreme Cougar Wives on IMDb. Is this 2013? Does that sound right?
Yep.
I don't see Andre on there. You're getting the shaft.
Oh, he's there.
Getting the shaft on the credit. It's got Sherry Winkleman and Geraldine Saunders.
Well, that's the thing. If you watch the episode, the other pieces of the episode are like way, I guess they're all believable. The only part that's not believable is the one that I'm in because I know my own mind. But there's like a 50-year-old woman who marries an 18-year-old, and like it's good stuff. It's high quality TLC channel entertainment, if that still exists.
Released in Canada in 2012, there was only 3 episodes made. So great. I'm going to look everywhere for that. You know how on How I Met Your Mother, Barney always runs out of the room when he hears there's more Robin Sparkles to find? If I was more rude than I am, I would hit pause and run out of this room and then run back in because it's where my laptop is and look for Extreme Cougar Wives. But this will have to be something my tomorrow night's entertainment will be looking for this. And Dickhead. Amongst other things on your IMDb. Hey, everybody go to Captain Drewski's IMDb page. It's Andrews with an S, Landsman. You'll see he's done quite a bit of stuff in there. But also, tell everybody about your stuff on Instagram.
To be clear, the acting career is on hold. We're here to promote the Delhi.
We already did that.
Hamden, Polecat.
Nope, we already did that. You can find some of his short stuff on Instagrams. And all the other social media places. I had it written down here where you could go see his stuff on Instagram. What's the name of that? Yes, there is ANS.
Yes, there is an S.
Yes, there is an S. And so, yeah, it's on hold. But that doesn't mean your stuff just goes away. So when you're rounding second base, I need people to have seen some of this stuff to yell at you as you're running to third base. And I'm sorry. Let's get into the
We would encourage for our audience, we would encourage you to look this up on your work computer, as I am sure that this is it's legitimate. So you have the roller out the barrel seal of approval.
Extreme Cougar Wives has my seal of approval, and I haven't even seen an episode. And I'm going to be devastated. There's only 3. Andrews, you studied metaphysics. Please, in layman's terms, explain to people what metaphysics is.
Meta, of course, from the Greek, meaning round. Physics, we all know physics is the study of the physical world, you know, the 3 dimensions and heat, temperature, etc. So if you study metaphysics, you study all the things that are in our realm of existence, but not in the concrete world. Wouldn't that be a correct fellow brain, Jeff Cougar?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, about how things function in the universe. So you're more learned in it than I am, but that my grasp on it is, you know, beyond the physical realm here.
So you're obviously an educated man. You study metaphysics, and yet you go on to be a bartender and work at a brewery also eventually. What happened here? What's the disconnect here? When did you realize that metaphysics is not something you were going to pursue the rest of your life?
Well, I don't know if that's entirely accurate, Beryl. I think once you start down the path of metaphysical exploration, you never stop. You know, whether or not it's lucrative is a different story. We all have to pick up certain jobs or odd jobs to sustain our existence if we don't have a particular career path that, you know, provides that bread, that dough, that capistrano. But, you know, I went out to L.A. in 2012 pursuing the acting world, and I gave myself a year to get the lay of the land, and the year turned into 5, and 5 turned into 8, and then just as I was getting started again, this thing called the coronavirus showed up, and that's the most metaphysical thing you could possibly endure. I mean, we all endured it together. I really don't want to like harp on it, but the silver linings of that thing were, you know, I started to realize what's really important in my life. Obviously, I ended up marrying my wife shortly after, came back east, lived in Delaware County for 3 years. We recently moved to Rockland, which is not super far, but a lot of people think it's in New Jersey. It's not.
Are you saying that you broke up with your wife and then COVID changed your mind about the way you thought about things? So then you sought her to get back with her?
No, we did break up for a year prior to COVID. We were already back together solid before COVID started. She and I had been like playing with when to come back east at some point, and COVID expedited that part of our lives. And after a month living in quarantine with my parents, I said, I can't keep her on the hook anymore. I got to bend the knee. And so that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
We made it official. COVID. No, I'm not. We met when I was a 24-year-old goofball running around town. And she was 20, you know, similar to my age. And she put up a lot. Let's put it that way.
Are you saying you have do you have a COVID child?
No. No, okay. He's only 4 months old. I mean, All children are COVID children now. Is that what we're saying?
No, I don't know. I'm too old for that kind of nonsense.
He was not born of COVID.
Excellent. Andrews.
Sir.
Jeff, I'm sorry. Am I overstepping you? Did you want to talk metaphysics stuff a little bit before we move on?
Well, I mean, I guess I would kind of, you know, take this into, you know, besides the acting, you know, what sorts of things from
I want to say one thing up, Jeff. I'm sorry. When you keep asking about studying metaphysics, do you think I actually took a course in metaphysics?
No, I don't know. I was actually not going to ask about metaphysics at all.
I'm sorry.
I guess in like a roundabout way, I kind of think about what sorts of things from our lives that we bring to vintage baseball that we don't realize that's what makes us who we are. Is there something in your life that maybe you thought was put away or wasn't a part anymore, and then you come on to vintage baseball and you're like, oh, there it is. Like, I remember doing that. And, you know, is there anything that you found again, thanks to vintage baseball?
You know, obviously baseball is a very special thing to anybody, any American, any anybody who plays it or sees it or what witnesses it. My dad had a friend who was a performance artist who never played or saw the game, came to a professional game. What he took away from it were the movements that all the umpires made on the field. What I'm trying to say is there's a lot of different things going on a baseball field. And while we're on the subject of umpires, vintage baseball experience relies heavily on the experience of an umpire. It's really tough to find a great umpire. I love umpiring. I unfortunately love playing even more. But for anybody who's umpiring out there, I got one tiny tip. Because I did this once sort of on a whim, and I got a lot of praise for it. And that's not why I did it, but if there's ever any questionable call, I really enjoyed deferring to the people involved in the call. So if there's a slide at second, and I can't really see it from where I'm at, I scream out, "On your honor, sir, were you safe?" And that, to me, kind of brings the moment of 1864, 1867, whatever it is, to bear. So that finally answered your question. But beyond that, it's the inclusivity. You know, it's you got your dairyman, you got your Mac, your corn shuckers, who they're all, you know, even if they don't look it, they're really talented ballers. And the Polecats, we have some days where we're right at the rhythm. We have some days we're not quite there, and that's okay. And, you know, we all do our best, and it is a game of fun. And it's, you know, it's part of the experience. It's part of doing some historical reenactment, shedding a little light on a piece of history that kind of gets overlooked, and a piece of American history that is unequivocally good. I mean, let's face it, you know, we're in a time of reckoning with what's gone on in this country. And there's a lot great that should be celebrated, and some, you know, we need to really get into more. And I know that I might be splitting lines, especially within the baseball community, but you talk about this. And that's actually one of the things I love about the experience too, is this place that nobody talks politics. Like, I know I don't see eye to eye most of some of my team, at least. And that's great. We're all still friends. We all get along. We have a good time. We shoot threes. We speak, you know, gruffly with each other, and it's all in good fun, and everybody knows that. And I think that's a really special thing about sport in general, and especially about vintage baseball. In our particular neck of the woods, it's also like a great thing to do on an afternoon where maybe there isn't so much to do. I mean, there's more to do now than there was in 2020 and 2021, excuse me. But, you know, it's a great family-friendly, you know, Saturday-Sunday afternoon activity.
It absolutely is. And politics is something that we don't address on the show because it's a black hole of conversation. And nobody wins. Everybody loses in a conversation about politics. So I don't think we've ever brought the subject up. This is as close as we've gotten to it. And now we go away from it.
This may not bring it up. What I'm trying to say is the history of baseball is an important one and a bright shining light.
Yes.
You know, I did not expect to be a leader on this team. I sort of was really happy to play in the first year's iteration of the team. At the end of the year, I said to Ben, I said, "Hey, man, you want some help?" And he said, "Hey, you're the captain now." so he's still, you know, he's head of recruitment. I got a third captain named Jason Hot Santa Pardee, without whom none of this would be possible. He and his son and his family take care of the field, and they live right in Hamden. And I owe a great debt to him.
What was that? What was that nickname?
I call him Hot Santa because he's got a big white beard, and well, but he's got the moves. But he's good with the bat. He has been since high school. He's a guy. I think if he really had you know, had a chance, he probably could have played some pro ball. But he's a great dude, and he, you know, like I said, he doesn't just take care of the field. Like, he makes sure that people show up. He helps with practice. I don't want to call him out, but he's a little camera shy and mic shy. I really wanted him to be here with me today, but maybe next year. He defers to me when it's time to give the end of game speech. Although Steamboat Ben Cairns is another character. The whole thing runs on characters. Let's be real, right? This whole vintage baseball experience runs on characters. It's like a TNT. Well, one of those stations used to have that as a motto, but it's really about vintage baseball.
Well, that's what this podcast runs on. I mean, we interview characters. I mean, if you're a character, indeed, we want to interview you. I mean, that's
characters welcome.
That's our sweet spot. That's our sweet spot. Before I give you the old pepper, I would like to hear about your experience in Prague. Please.
So I was fortunate enough to spend a spring semester of my junior year in Prague. Prague is an amazing city. It's got architecture from every different era going back to 800 AD. One of my favorite places in that city is, so you have the Hrad, the Prague Hrad, which is the main castle that like every tourist knows about, but only half the tourists know about the Visehrad, which is the mythical birthplace of the city. It's a little bit further south and on the other side of the Vltava River from the main Hrad. And the story I heard, which I believe, is that the princess of the year, she was on top of the Hrad, which had just been built, and she was tripping on mushrooms, and she saw the vision of what Prague would become and said, this is where we're going to center our empire from. And, 600 years later, they founded the Charles University. It was the center of an empire back then. These days, it's kind of this cool sort of somewhat stuck in the 80s. And by these days, I mean like 15 years ago. I haven't been back since 2008. But it's a really special place. A lot of cool theater, a lot of cool people, a lot of interesting eats. And I highly recommend it to anybody traveling in Europe.
Excellent. Was the movie XXX supposed to be in Prague? Did I have that right? The Vin Diesel.
It definitely was. Fun story about that movie. About 20 minutes into the movie, you meet a character. The first character who is Czech, and his first line is, "My name is Milan Sova." I know a Milan Sova. He's from Delhi. He's someone I actually was acting with at age 12. He's a great guy. I hope he comes to a visit basically in this year.
Excellent. Well, Andrews, it's certainly been a pleasure to have you on the show. I appreciate you so much coming on. You're an interesting dude. You've had an interesting life up until now. I can only assume it's going to head down this way.
Meryl, can I interject for one thing? Because sure. I'm surprised that you've done your homework, but you haven't even asked me about the two things that like people boil me down to who have only met me for like a half hour.
Well, I can only do as much as social media tells me to do.
Did you know that yesterday was Jeopardy's 60th birthday?
Okay. I think I saw that somewhere.
I'm a third place Jeopardy contestant.
What?
That's like the ultimate humble brag. I answered 19 questions, clues correctly from Alex Trebek in 2018. And then I also bicycled across America.
What?
That's a cool one.
That's a really metaphysical journey. I mean, it's physical, but very metaphysical as well. We're going to save that for next time. Let's pepper it up.
This worked out perfectly. This worked out perfectly. There will be a next time. We'll do a part two. You'll bring on one of the guys from the team that couldn't make it tonight. And we'll get into Jeopardy. We'll get into bicycling across America. Oh, my goodness.
And there's then, one quick thing. Talking about Prague, and that I think that we can find a connection, you know, even more between you. According to TripAdvisor, there's a spot in Prague called Thrill Park, Prague's horror theme park.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
To me. I'll have to go back.
Yeah. What was it? It was like in the top 10 of it's Traveler's Choice by TripAdvisor. Number one of 22 amusement parks in Prague.
Wow. They really enjoy the thrills and the spills.
It's a year-round horror-themed amusement park?
That's what it appears to be. Come with your friends to enjoy one hell of an emotional roller coaster ride. And there's four dudes hugging each other in fear.
How much beer?
Yeah, what would
beer culture,
on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the fear look on the face?
I mean, you're asking me to judge things, and the last time I judged something, you got really, really upset.
Do you think that
gave my
actors?
Daughter high marks? You gave my daughter high. I gave my daughter high marks, and you got mad at me for it. So I'm not judging anything.
Because you're not an honest judge. That's right. Okay, so never mind. Okay, Andrews, before we get you out of here, I'm going to give you the old pepper. I don't know if you've listened through an entire episode of this, but it's a little thing we do. Quick answers, quick questions. It's bull stuff. Here we go. Do you believe more in a Yeti or the Loch Ness Monster?
Yeti.
What's your favorite Die Hard movie?
One.
What is your favorite disco song?
I Feel Love.
What was your first car?
Toyota Prius.
Two-part question. What was the first date you took your wife on? And then what was the first date after you broke her heart that you took her date? You took her on another first date?
First date, that's a hazy time. I could tell you our first meeting, our first, it wouldn't be a date. But we met it out in downtown New York at a place called Thebes, and I read her palm, allegedly.
You read her palm. Whoa.
Well, I know that I didn't like, I'm not really a palm reader, but I guess I.
Oh, no, I was with you. That's a baller move, reading the palm. And you just made up some stuff.
Not the time.
Just an excuse to hold her hand, that's all.
There you go.
It worked. You got to use the reading of the palm thing. You actually have to know some words that are affiliated with reading of the palm. You don't remember anything you said from reading her palm, but could you make up something like right now what you think you might have said?
She's got a really long lifeline. Her Mons Venus was throbbing.
That wasn't hers.
I'll tell you this. So the guy I mentioned before, he's a great guy named Joe Ballin. He's the star of Dickhead, and he was there that night with his girlfriend. And his girlfriend said, "Oh man, Cheryl's the name of my wife. Cheryl's never gonna go for Andy." And she saw me reading her palm. I was like, "What is it? What the heck is he doing?" Right? And Joe just said, "Just wait." Ten years later.
But you know, good things come to all that wait. Huh?
So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Hence the long lifeline.
Yes, and then something.
I was right about that so far.
Have you gotten an injury during vintage baseball or acting or both?
I'm a little bit of a vintage baseball slut, as they call it, someone who plays for many teams.
They don't say that. Nope. Nobody says that.
Somebody called me that. I said, whatever, man. You know, just because I get asked to play by many teams. A few teams. But I was with the Bulldogs out in Long Island at the beginning of last year. I was playing third. Somebody was stealing. And the ball was thrown a little bit to my left, so I went to catch it. And this dude, I know he didn't mean it, but he slid it in my leg. I was very upset. I was like, I am supposed to captain my own team. I'm not even going to be able to play this year. I got up to bat and hit a triple. And then after that, I couldn't run at all. So that was a bad couple weeks. But that was like early or mid-April. By our first game, which wasn't until late May, I was fine.
How many antelope?
But I've seen some gnarly injuries. Sorry.
Oh, well, let's stay here for a second. Name the gnarliest injury you remember seeing.
I have seen a guy go up for a line drive at short, and then he leaves the field, and he shows me his X-ray the next day, where the top segment of his middle finger is totally displaced from the rest of it. That's pretty gnarly.
That's gnarly. How many antelope would it take to kill Godzilla? These are angry antelope, by the way. They're angry. They're bitter. Vicious.
Where N approaches 1 billion, I don't think any number of antelope could take Godzilla, frankly.
What was your first?
Now that's metaphysical.
What was your first concert?
Dragon Force.
Paper, rock, or scissors?
Rock.
When you go out for a social gathering that you know you're going to be drinking, what is the first drink that you have and what is the last?
Start with tequila, end with beer. Everything is sensible. That's just sensible.
True. Well, Jeff, we didn't even talk about this in the thing, but my wife and I have scheduled a date to go drink around the world at Epcot. And we're coming up. We're coming up with our strategy.
Your order.
You know, the strategy of what are you going to do?
Are you going to drink for the cycle?
We're going to drink around the world. We've invited all of our friends. I think Jeff, you got an invite.
I did.
There's 11. Yeah, there's 11 countries, so it's 11 drinks. And starting in Canada, going backwards. And
get you a moose head to start.
Well, no, I'm going to start with a liquor. Going to start with a cocktail, and then it's just beer for me the rest of the way.
Good call.
But definitely starting with a little something, because I know what's going to happen to me in Germany, and that's, you know, about halfway through. So anyway.
Das Boot?
Das Boot. Absolutely. Build your best pizza for us. Your best pizza.
We need four cheeses. Obviously mozzarella, some gorgonzola, some fontina, and just a dash of parmesan. We need some meats, a couple of meats, sausage. I mean, just a sausage and onion, but I like peppers too. Sausage, peppers, and onion.
Adjoining question to that, what topping is eliminated forever?
Out of what I've just said?
No, in toppings in general. If the International Pizza Commission is meeting to eliminate one topping forever.
Don't do it.
Olives. Topping.
Don't do it. Don't do it. No, go ahead.
Olives.
All right. I accept that.
Anchovies
are good with the right stuff surrounding them. I don't get them all the time, but they're salty, but I'm a little salty. My favorite new question I ask people is, how big do the holes get in your socks before you throw them away?
Oh yeah. We're going to approach a quarter, I think, before I throw them away.
Yeah.
My wife throws them away, dime.
Oh no, no! She needs to stay out of your business. You tell her to stay. Keep her damn hands off your socks.
We'll compromise at Buffalo Nickel.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Scary movie.
Yes, that's
what
I said.
Scary movie. That's not a scary movie. The Shining.
Overrated. Speaking of overrated,
you prefer The Shining?
The Shinny.
You want to get sued?
Nobody wants to get sued around here. Can you tell me an overrated movie, since you have an eye, probably? A movie that everyone loves that you're like, no, it's not that good.
You know, I've heard you ask that question, and I've thought about that one, because I have a tendency to find something good about any, like, I'll enjoy terrible movies. So that's a really tough one for me. Movie that's overrated. You know what? I'm a big Scorsese fan, and I did not like The Departed all that much.
Interesting take. I didn't see that coming. You're the first person I've ever met that didn't like The Departed.
No, I liked it, but not as much as everybody else.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's overrated. It's still good, but it's also an adaptation of it.
Who is your favorite Power Ranger?
Green / White. R.I.P.
And what is your third favorite color?
Purple.
That's wrong. It's actually yellow. Okay. Andrews, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate you. You are a good dude, my friend. A pleasure to talk to you. I cannot wait to talk to you again. Have fun with those
kids. I want to make one thing clear. I really love my wife. I want to thank her for sticking with me, for being so patient with me, and for bearing my child. That wasn't clear before. Love you, Cheryl. She will listen.
Well, I think you made it clear that you've loved this woman on multiple occasions throughout your life. And she probably has loved you at least once. So I think we're
all that counts.
I think we're clear. I mean, dude, you were in Dickhead. She's still with you. She's a keeper. She loves you. I think we've. Did you want to on the way out? Did you want to go ahead and tell us what beer you're drinking?
Oh, yes. Free Tractor. If you find it out there, I highly recommend, because it's coming off shelves. This is a former core beer of the Catskill Brewery. It's a farmhouse ale. We are sunsetting this beer until at least 2025. So it's delightful. It's got some, you know, candy apple aromas. It's got some good Belgian yeast funk. And I mean the good funk, of course. We bring the good funk when we talk farmhouse ale. For those of you who don't know what a farmhouse ale is, it's like a Saison, but a little less refined.
We want the funk. What would you say of all the selections from the Catskill Brewery has been your favorite?
We make a world-class Pilsner, and it's called Ball Lightning, and I bring it to every baseball game.
So everybody, before you make fun of something on Andrew's IMDb, Andrews, because when your name ends in an S and you're like Andrews,
exactly.
You got to get the beer. Can you have beer before the game on the East Coast?
Depends on the venue. Some captains frown upon it mightily. It depends what area you're playing, right? If you're in the 1880s, you're in the temperance movement. But I think 1864 ball is acceptable.
I think if it's an exceptional Pilsner, I think there should be like an exception for before the match.
Indeed.
I'm talking about.
There's a couple of teams out there that have sampled it. I'll continue to bring it around.
Well,
just a man that goes to the, we're talking about extreme cougar wives and good funk, like there,
it's good funk.
Like it's either like all or nothing with you, Andrews. And I applaud you for that.
That's how Drewski rolls.
Isn't that what metaphysics is? All or nothing. I thought that was what it was.
No? Is that what it is?
Indeed.
In word and deed.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to get out of here. Jeff, do you got some snappy thing to say at the end of this?
You know, when you have all manner of funk that you can choose from, it's really best. You have to think about what kind of funk would be really, truly appreciated by everybody in attendance. And when given the option, it's important to choose the extreme funk.
Oh, you don't want that.